one thing that we are. We're an animal, but we're also the next stage of animals where we're aware of who we are and we contemplate our existence. And when you contemplate your existence and you're an intelligent life form, you should always be seeking to improve. If you're always seeking to improve, the thing that you look at, like, what has brought me the most positive results?
Hi, this is Ronald Gibson, and this is Short Life Advice from the Best of the Best. Today I have with me...
Nikki Schwartz.
Nikki, welcome. Second guest on the
podcast. Thank you. Excited to be here.
What's your title with Schneider?
I'm actually the regional sales director here in Chicago for STM. I've been here for 13 years, so I've had the privilege of growing up in STM. I started as a seller. I had spent time as a team leader, and I had 8+ years as a sales ops manager, and for the last 2.5 years have had the privilege to be the regional sales director here.
Okay, and you came straight out of college to Schneider?
I did. Right after graduation, I moved home for a few days, and my mom had the computer open and waiting for me, looking for me to get out of the house, so... I was lucky enough to have a friend that was in one of the original classes back in Evanston, and I reached out to her. I was like, get me out of my parents' home. I need my freedom back. And she was like, I'll get you an interview. Fill out this form, and the rest is history.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Where did you go to school at?
I went to St. Norbert College.
Okay.
Up in Green Bay.
So. Yeah, yeah. We do have a lot of associates that come from up there.
We do. Go Green Knights.
What made you go up to St. Norbert's? It's a smaller college up there, isn't it?
It's very small. It is probably smaller than some high schools people attend, but it's a funny story. I had no intention of going to St. Norbert. My father put me on the mailing list to receive information about them. I was actually enrolled and had a room and board at Marquette University.
Oh, okay.
In Milwaukee. And... Yeah. For some reason, my dad's like, just apply to St. Norbert, see what happens. I literally put on the application. My, you know, reasons why you're applying was my dad made me. some reason that they felt that that was appropriate. I was fortunate, though, to play soccer in high school, and I got contacted by their coach. So I was asked to come up in the back half of my senior year to visit the college, and I fell in love. It's small, it's quaint, it's pretty, but the coach was all I needed to really change my mind. He made sure that I knew that athletics was second to the academics and that my life wouldn't be just for sports. So he was really committed to the student-athlete life balance, and I really appreciated that. So I was excited to continue to play a sport I loved and get a good education.
That's awesome.
So somehow my dad won, but yeah.
Did you say you played some at St. Norbert?
I did. I played all 4 years.
Oh, did you?
I did.
That's awesome. How well did you do?
We were really good my first 3 years. We're in a rebuilding year, my final year, but we were always in the conference championship games, and between us, Lake Forest and Grinnell and Carroll University. So still hold some of those grudges and thoughts and feelings towards those other schools, but all in good fun. It was an awesome experience. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, I didn't know you were that competitive soccer like that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
You miss it? Do you play at all ever still?
I played for like the first 7 years once I moved to Chicago, and then my life kind of got in the way.
Mm-hmm.
I currently am going to live through my children, so we have them signed up for.
That's what I was gonna ask.
They're about to start their seasons here in the next few weeks. My daughter is not excited. I'm gonna get her pink cleats and hope for the best, and hope that entices her. My son is thrilled to be able to run around, so I'm just hoping one of them likes it. 50-50 chance here, but
I was it was something I asked JK in the last podcast, but I was just kind of asking, like, how do you go about at, because I played 3 sports and I would like my kid, but I don't want to force them down any sport or to do any sport. Like, you say your daughter doesn't like it. Like, what's your strategy of getting them
pink cleats. Like, literally, if anyone knows me, pink is my least favorite color. It is my daughter's favorite. She's pink, sparkles, the whole nine, which is the opposite of me. Honestly, my husband and I have been pretty clear, and we just want them to be involved in something, whether it's an individual, you know, role or a team sport. But you can see the competitive nature in her. She gets very competitive, just like racing her brother outside, and you can see it. So you know she has it. But yeah, I don't know that I'll push soccer necessarily. I would love it because I understand it. But I actually, my brother and I both grew up playing sports. My parents had never played themselves, and they fully supported us. So my dad was he played football his whole life. My brother never put on pads. He actually played soccer and hockey, two sports my dad knew nothing about. And then I played soccer and basketball majority of my life. And again, my mom claims she played. I'm not sure about that, given the skills on the court and our driveway. But again, they were fully supportive as long as we were committed to it. That was their big thing with us. If you made a commitment, you're going to see that commitment through. So that's really what we're looking to instill in our kids is find something you love and you're excited to do. Make that commitment, allow that structure to kind of help you in life, and see where it goes.
Because I think sports helps build character really early on in life. The biggest thing is failure and getting over that, especially early on. And then that's how you do grow.
Oh, yeah.
So I think sports is a huge thing when it comes to that. So if you can somehow get them into it without forcing it down their throat, would be nice.
That's the goal. We'll see. We'll see. Right now she's telling me I can play for her. So, you know, it can only get better. We'll see in 2 weeks.
Cool. I like it. I like starting off the interview with asking, like, what's your first concert or, like, CD album that you've ever had or been to?
So I'll go with the latter part of that. So I grew up when there were still cassette tapes. So the first cassette I owned was Mariah Carey Music Box.
Okay.
And I can still remember what it looked like, the cover of the cassette tape that was in my cassette tape holder. Yeah, so Mariah Carey Music Box.
That's good. What was your favorite song on that one? Do you remember?
I don't even remember. Yeah. I just know that I would put in the tapes and put my Walkman in it and walk around my house thinking I was like the coolest thing that ever existed. And my parents probably were just dying inside like, you look like such a fool. But
I can and have jammed this Mariah Carey in my day. So.
Oh, yeah. She's still great.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. But yeah, her, Paula Abdul, Crisscross, I had all those tapes.
That's a good one. I like it. What would you say is like the most impactful book that you've read or one that you've given the most as a gift and why?
So this won't be a shock to you because I talked to you about it for like months and years, it feels. But One Small Step Can Change Your Life, The Kaizen Way. So that's by Robert Maurer. We actually got that book from Berja almost 3-4 years ago now at Christmas. He gave it out to the whole leadership team. It's a small book. It's an easy read. I read it. I thought we had to read it. So honestly, I read it with the thought that it was mandatory. No one else seemed to read it. It was more or less just a self-awareness book, which is great. But I really took it to heart. I've applied it a lot more outside of – I started by applying it in my personal life, honestly, small little one-degree changes that I could make that would get me to my end goals. I was struggling at the time getting back to working out. And as an athlete, you're so structured and so routine. So when I moved to this city – initially, I had a trainer, but that's costly, and I made other decisions to spend my money growing up in my 20s in the city, so I really got away from that part of my life, that physical release that I needed that really helped me mentally be the best and the sharpest I could be, so I leveraged a lot of the concepts in there to get myself back on track. So I would say that I give it to people and challenge them first to find something personally and that they can really connect to, and then take that from there and evolve it into, now how do you apply that to your day sitting here, right? And what we do, and what's that one degree change you can make that gets you closer to the goal instead of thinking, well, today I'm going to set my goal for the end of the year. But if tomorrow and the next day aren't what I want them to be, well, now my goal is gone. I'm done. So I think that would be the book. So
I read the same book before, and you know what I've noticed after reading that, and I've heard about the Kaizen way and small steps, but after reading that book, it comes up in so many other books that you notice the recent, you're in the Schneider Book Club with me as well.
Yeah.
And the new book that we have is Atomic Habits by James Clear. And it's all about making small change, having small habits in your life and how big of a difference that can make in the grand scheme of things. And just, you know, I'm pretty sure it's a pretty old book and the whole Kaizen thing, but I just see it comes up in all the books. It's like, and as you're working through it yourself, you know, we've talked about a lot of the practices that we implement in our lives, whether it's at work or away from work. When you don't pull them to the small steps, when you make them grandiose, or it's like you want to hit a certain amount of revenue for the end of the year or the end of a month, or you want to, mine was, I think I was telling you about meditation.
Yep.
Mine was, I want to meditate 30 minutes. And then I just couldn't turn it into a habit that way because it was so daunting.
Yep.
I couldn't find time to sit 30 minutes. But when I changed it to 5 minutes, just do 5 minutes each day, formed it into a habit, then I could increase the time. And you can do that in any part of your life, whether it's eating healthy or whatever it may be.
I'm still working on that meditation. I'm still on my 3 minutes, but I'm doing it consistently. But yeah, it is crazy how if you just slow yourself down to small attainable goals and just being grateful and appreciative for yourself that you've achieved them, how that in itself just eliminates a lot of the obstacles that get in the way.
Yeah, that little like rewards factor of just hitting those small goals for yourself.
Yeah.
And even reward yourself for hitting those.
I mean, no one celebrates them, but they should be celebrated somehow. And I think that in itself is, I'm reading a book about self-compassion, and that's one of the biggest things. And I've reread this chapter because it's such a focus of, do you give yourself enough credit and recognize what you have done versus being like, well, I checked that box, now on to the next so quickly that you get lost in it also. Yeah, I think that little celebratory moment and then right back to it and the next 1 degree that gets you there is extremely key to anything you want to achieve.
Yeah. This kind of tie. I've heard you talk about this before when it comes to fixing or making sure you stick to your habits when it comes to exercise. And one of the questions that I usually ask is one unusual habit or absurd thing that you love or do. Tell us a story about
how you
forced yourself to get back into working out in the mornings.
Okay. So I actually followed what the book said. I had to just put my workout clothes out. Now, mind you, I have an elliptical in my basement of my house, so it's not far. I don't have to go outside. I literally just have to go down a couple stairs. But I couldn't get myself to do it. So I started just putting my workout clothes out. That in itself, for like 3 to 5 days, I was like, okay, well, I can put them out. The next part was just to put them on. So I would come home from work and I would just put them on.
Yeah.
And I did that again for about 3 to 5 days. My husband was like, what is happening? Because nothing was actually happening. I was like, stay with it. I'm going to see if this works. And then the following week was just go and stand on, whether I have the elliptical, but treadmill or piece of equipment you want to work out on, just stand there. Like, okay, I can do this. So I would just stand there with the TV on, and then it was slow increments. So it was like, now do some sort of activity for 5 minutes. Now, mind you, I used to play soccer, so that's 90 minutes of moving. So 5 minutes, I was like, I got this. And then it just evolved from there. I ended up making even more 1 degree changes and changed it to, I would have a more productive day if I worked out in the morning. Well, for me, I have a lovely commute in from the suburbs to the city every day. So I had to make 1 degree changes to get up at 4 a.m. so I could get 30 minutes in for me, which sounds terrible for most people, but I found it more effective if my day started there. I had a clear mind. I felt good. I was ready to go and get after the day. Than trying to like muster up the energy after, you know, coming into the city, commuting back out, picking up my kids, all of that. So again, a lot of 1-degree changes along the way that just helped me get there. But yeah, set them out. Now I actually sleep in my workout clothes to this day. I've taken it to that extreme, but then I have no excuses. I just literally, my alarm goes off, I walk down the stairs.
Yeah.
So I've tried to eliminate all of the obstacles that would meant like would have allowed me just to be like, not today.
I like it. I always tell people the same thing when it comes to your example of working out in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think when you give yourself an entire full day, there's so much things that can interrupt you in your day, so much stressors that can come in, so many outside people, whether it's your boss, whether it's your significant other, whether it's your kids, can give you so many outs to doing the things that you want to do. We're talking about exercise right now, but it can get you or give you an excuse to not do it. But if you do it in the morning, there's not many excuses getting out of it then.
Yeah, there's no one but me to blame if it doesn't happen, which is, again, I need to be the one that has to be. You can't look at anyone else, can't finger point. It's that look in to be like, it's on you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we
can. That's the best part about working out in the morning for sure.
Yeah. Clear
gets
mind.
It over with.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about anything after work. You
right.
know, all you're thinking about is going home, making dinner, relaxing. Well, hopefully relaxing.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, that's the goal. That's the goal.
Are there any other unusual habits or absurd things that out there that I don't know about?
I don't know that it's like a habit, but an absurd thing that I enjoy, which my husband would know. But you know when you get like sunburn and your skin peels?
Mm-hmm.
Most people think this is so disgusting. I don't even know why I'm admitting it actually right now that I'm talking about it, but I've committed, so I'm going to continue. I enjoy peeling skin off.
Okay.
Whether it's myself or somebody that's okay with it, not like a stranger, but my friends and family members know this about me, so I don't. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, I don't mind it.
Much more strange when you say it out loud.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be the absurd, weird thing.
Sometimes when you get real sunburn, there's some big...
Yeah, and it's big, right? Yeah. And it's not the little ones. It's that big peel.
Yeah.
I don't know. So weird.
So did you... I used to have a pet snake back in the day. Did you like... It was like a 5-foot ball python where the...
It would shed.
What do you think about that, Skinner? Are you
no, I would never touch a snake. You just never. No, human people.
That's what
people
I think of.
Only.
Human skin. The snake
yeah, the
skin
big
peel.
Peel
off and be this like 5-piece.
Yeah, it was like the goal
skin.
To see how big you could get it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is because it's not like you would peel off a big piece of skin and like celebrate it, but something about that. So creepy.
Okay, we can revert it back to your career and stuff here. How was a failure or an apparent failure at the time set you up for later success? Or do you have like a favorite failure years in your life or career or anywhere?
I think you kind of hit on it before, but as an athlete, you don't grow unless you fail. So I learned at a pretty young age that if I wasn't practicing, I wasn't going to see the field or the court. And if I wasn't performing in a game, that I would need to work on something. So failure for me was never that negative. It was an opportunity to grow. And I was always one to leverage my coaches and ask what I needed to do. So I think if I take that whole way of growing up and just what I knew to be a norm, it's absolutely served me well in this, you know, at my career with Schneider. I don't know that there's one thing I've failed at that really was the one thing. But again, it's looking at any opportunity where something wasn't, I didn't get the outcome I wanted. And it's okay. I don't beat myself up about it. I'm really going to seek to understand, well, what happened? What can I do differently? What's my 1 degree? Who do I need to leverage to help me? Because clearly I'm not going to do it by myself at this point. And how do we get to where we want to go? I mean, you could take it as simple as, you know, building my first, you know, building a load incorrectly when I first started and switching your origin and destination in the system. And now you have a driver that's in California when it should have been in Texas, and someone's angry, very angry. And now I have to eat, you know, there's a VNU we owe. I'm obviously can't ask anybody to help recoup that. This is on me. But even little things like that, obviously derail you in the moment. But if you step back, attention to detail became that much more critical in a role, and you slow down a bit and you don't make that same mistake again because, oh yeah, remember what that's like and slow it down. And is that the right origin? Is that the right destination? You have all the right information needed to be successful. So I think even just that in its simplistic form has helped me. I don't really look at failure as a bad thing. I don't think I've grown to who I am today because I was successful. I don't think I'd be here if I didn't fail pretty much every day in some way, shape, or form, forcing me to learn something and become better.
That's a great perspective to have on failure, to learn, especially early on.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think the biggest hiccup people get on it is instead of thinking about the things you think about when you have a failure and trying to learn from it, a lot of times it's pointing fingers
mm-hmm.
other ways. It's
yeah.
like this professor, this teacher, or
mm-hmm.
my parents, or my circumstance that I was grew up in, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's always someone else that was causing mm-hmm. their failure, and they don't look internally and try to see the true reasons for their failure and then actually learning from it. Because when you try and point your finger,
mm-hmm.
you're never going to actually learn from it. Seems like you, maybe it was the way you were raised
yeah.
or something, or and just through sports or maybe.
I honestly
like,
do think, I mean, and I don't want sports to be like the only thing that was, you know, a positive in my upbringing, but it was a huge factor, but more so because I didn't have the parents that fought the fights for me. If I wasn't playing, my dad was asking me, or my mom was asking me, well, how did you practice?
Yeah.
What was practice like? Or talking to me about how in the game this might be the reason. And did you ask your coach why you're not playing or what you need to do?
Mm.
So actually in high school, my high school was very, very well known for soccer. They were nationally ranked. So I was playing with some of the best high school athletes in the country, which was great.
Yeah.
But with that came, for me, the ability. I didn't see the field much the first time I made the varsity team, which was new to me. I had always played. I'd always been on teams where I saw a lot of playing time. So that was hard. But my parents having a conversation for me, it was, you need to find out then what you need to work on all summer to earn a starting spot. Not how you get better. It was, how do you earn that spot? So I actually went up to my coach, who was obviously a teacher, and I said, what do I have to do? I'll work on it all summer. And he
That's
said,
awesome.
You have to learn to use your left foot. I'm right-footed. I'm right-handed, right? So he's like, you need to be able to use your left foot, and that defender role is yours. I was like, that's it? He's like, yeah. I was like, okay. So I worked all summer and earned the spot. So again, it wasn't, and I didn't have, not that it was this earth-shattering move, but I didn't have to worry about anyone doing it for me. I really learned that if I just saw an opportunity and addressed it with the person that I needed to, we could work to an outcome. So that was, I definitely didn't see it this way during it. I was really mad at my parents. I had a lot of friends whose parents would have these conversations for them.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I feel slighted by my parents, but I have since thanked them a lot for them pushing me to always be the one to have the conversation.
Yeah. That's, it sounded like they were a very large influence with the way your character was formed. I mean, that's,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of parents do have those conversations for their kids,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure you're going to probably nurture your children the same way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, crazy example, but in my high school or middle school, a kid on a eighth grade golf team, coach didn't start the kid on the golf team, top five spot.
Yeah.
He had to be on the team to make the team, didn't start him. his dad comes to the field and fights the coach, ends up going to jail, long story short. But crazy stuff like that happens
all
the time, where it's
time.
Like parents are jumping in mm-hmm. and trying to make and do these things, and the kids aren't developing these. They ain't developing their character
yep.
like you did. And,
yeah.
and that will last a lifetime. I don't think people see how much of an impact that makes for people up all the way up in adulthood.
Yeah.
And still making an impact for you.
It for sure is.
And then it's going to make an impact on your children and
yeah.
on down the line. We're a better mm-hmm. universe, as Burgess says, for it.
Yeah, we are. And it's funny because one of my expectations since I've been a leader has been no excuses. And it's been, I always say, you can thank my dad for this, but I wasn't allowed to have them. So, like, I'm all about making mistakes. It's clearly stated in there. Mistakes will happen. That's fine. It's how we get through the situation and how we learn from it that matters. I just don't have time for finger pointing. So, really just making sure that anyone I lead knows that and understands where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I give them the Cliff Notes version of why. But, yeah, it all stems from my upbringing for sure.
That's great. You should give him a shout out after this.
Oh, yeah. He knows. I've given him, I've said thank you enough and apologized for plenty in the last few years. So he is aware.
So this, I had another question here. When you feel overwhelmed or unfocused mm-hmm. or have lost your focus temporarily, what do you do if helpful? Like, what questions do you ask yourself?
I tend to just, honestly, breathing has become a bigger part. Shocking to hear. But just slowing myself down. So if I can slow myself down, I really just focus on my breathing, and then I can wrap my head around what's causing me to be overwhelmed. If I'm unable to do that, I have my people, right? The people that I know me at the core of who I am, that will hear me out and then also shake me the way I need to be shaken a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
My mom is one of those people. I go to her with specific things, but I have my work people. So Sean Howery has been instrumental in my Schneider career, and he knows this. He'll love hearing this though. But he's one of my people. Adrian Barber's the other. We really grew up here together, and they've always been those people for me to hear me out, laugh at me when I'm being crazy, but really get me to see it the right way and work through the emotion and the passion that's in the moment, and get me to articulate what I would like to before causing bigger problems. But yeah, I've got my people. And if it's becoming like a repeat thing and it's multiple days of I'm getting in my own way, it's typically because I'm not taking care of myself the way I need to. So I'm not giving myself that, my workouts aren't as good as they need to be, or I'm just going through the motions with them and I'm not giving myself that initial mental release I need. So I'll really check myself in all of those spaces given how long it's taking, but it's taken me a while to get to that point. But.
So breathing, and then just find like a peer
mm-hmm.
or someone you trust that you can talk it through.
Yeah,
basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. Who knows me enough to be like, you're crazy, or you've got a point, but tone it down a bit. So
I've been with Schneider for a little over 6.5 years, but I remember early on you being a little more passionate, and it would come out, it would at least come out more. I'm sure you have the same passion for Schneider and to succeed in your career and everything, but it seemed like it came out more back then. As far as, I don't know, what changed? Or is it just having kids or a little bit of everything?
I don't know if kids helped it. I think I'm fortunate enough to have people that will give me the feedback I need and know how to and consistently. So, again, if I wanted to make an impact, I think initially I thought the only way to do that was to be loud, right?
Yeah,
and my point would only get across if I was vocal.
Yeah.
And I think a lot more of my messages were not heard because of that.
Okay.
But in my mind, they were all well received, and this is just who I am, and I'll play this role.
Mm.
I think I wasted a significant amount of time trying to be that person. for sure kids have had an impact on my perspective and just slowing down and the way I communicate in general. My children aren't going to respond to me if I'm loud. They look at me like, okay, or tell me that they're scared. So like, that's not effective. But I think for here, it was even just working to connect with people more so they knew me. And I think when I felt more connected with people and there was more of a trust with the teams I'm working with or the associates I'm working with, everyone understands where it's coming from, and I don't feel the need to prove that much more. So again, with tenure, I think has come my ability to check myself and do that internal look of, you know, is this the time? Is this make sense? Is this going to help you get your point across? Or is it going to hurt the movement you're trying to make to get to the solution? And I honestly think more than anything, it's just tenure more than anything, and just realizing that was not effective ever. But
there was a time, I don't know if you remember this, but I think it was my first year and a half or so.
Oh, God.
We had like an office meeting that we do, a large office meeting when we used to have them up here in the front. And then it was at the very beginning of the meeting, and whoever was standing beside me made me like laugh or chuckle or something. Mm-hmm. And here you come around behind and like, you know, grab me by the arm, and I'm like, and you were like definitely upset. And I was wondering what the heck was going on. And then, but my perspective then of you has changed, but I remember thinking,
hopefully,
like, who is this? Yeah, who is this Nikki lady?
That's true.
But but no, just I've seen you grown into, I mean, not that you were a bad leader then,
mm-hmm.
but just me becoming a leader over the past 2.5-3 years and just the impact you make on people. And I think you are in a great spot of Schneider, and I love that you're teaching other people how to lead, because you make a great impact on other leaders. And I think if we have more people like you that are amongst our top leadership team, I think Schneider is going to go wherever it wants to go. It is going to be the best company in the universe, like Berger wants to be, or like
goal.
We all want to be.
That's the goal. We're going to get there.
But that was one little funny
thing. You know, the floor wides used to get to me, and people wouldn't listen, so we've reined it in since then.
Yeah, for sure. We're a little more rambunctious in our floor meetings now, I feel like.
Yeah, we've loosened up a bit.
Yeah. They're a little more stagnant back then, I think.
That's funny.
Yeah. I like this one. If you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, metaphorically speaking, getting a message out to millions and billions, what would it say? Why?
One day at a time. Probably more because I need it to remind myself to slow down and just in the moment, just live that moment and take it for what it's worth. Anything, if you just stay in the moment, can be worked through. It doesn't have to get escalated. There's no need for it. And again, you can work really well with others. You can learn from others in that space. Personally and professionally, I think that one day at a time mentality is really what I need. And I think a lot of people could use, given just the state of where we are as a society, where everything's so in your face and so readily available, you kind of forget to like be present. So really, you know, just day at a time in the moment.
Mm. I was kind of telling the interviewee today, so something I had to interview, and just some advice I was giving him. It just like, it's similar. Don't sweat the small things.
Yeah.
When you take one day at a time,
mm-hmm.
In any job, you can't stress about any, especially things that are out of your control.
Yeah.
You have to take one day at a time,
yeah.
not let the previous day affect the next day,
mm-hmm.
or the future day, some future goal that
mm-hmm.
you're maybe not going to meet, or it's not looking like you're going to meet, affect the current day that you're at, you know, one day at a time. That's very important. You can, so many variables that come into that, but That'd be a good billboard, I think, to get across to a lot of people.
Slow down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One day at a time, three deep breaths.
Yeah. Now breathe.
This, in the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Self-awareness. I think that was such a foreign concept to me, and I wouldn't even say 5 years. I'd say probably two. I don't know why I didn't see it clearer until then, honestly. Like, I've tried to figure out why it took me so long to, like, get out of my own way there, but I'm obviously very proud and very Irish, so I'll just chalk it up to that. Really, once I started working on myself and focusing more in a situation, well, what's your role in this? How did you impact it? And then choosing to speak or react or move forward. I've seen the most change, not only professionally, but personally too. Just in my communication in general with people, my messages get across better. It's weird when that happens, but really just that self-awareness piece and always, you know, that look in.
Yeah, that's huge. That's one thing I learned. It's like trying to become the best you can be. And once you figure that out, everything else, your relationships, your relationships within your work life, your work itself. Like, if I can figure myself out first, then start figuring some other things out. Those other things become easier once you figure yourself out.
It's crazy when you realize you have the power to be the best you. Like, you're the only one that has that power. It's not anyone else. And for so long, and I don't even know why. I don't have like this reason for thinking it. I don't know if it's a society thing or what, but why I ever assumed that somebody else was going to be the one to unlock all of these doors and make me the best me. And it wasn't, you know, again, it's not just personally, professionally too. I was the only one that could do that. And I think when you really get to that moment of you're in control of your own destiny, you and only you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you sit here and point fingers all you want, but you're never going to become that best version. I think once I got that, finally wrapped my head around that, it was really, again, that perspective I needed probably for years prior. But
it's great. That's what's crazy. I'm thinking in my head, it's like, it's crazy how long it takes us to get to that point. Yeah. I think I was 27, 28 years old until I realized the same very thing. When was your, do you have an aha moment, or when was your moment that you're like, shit, I'm going to have to do this on my own and figure it out?
I think honestly, when I stopped making everything else a priority, I'm really good at like hiding in or like assuming like I'll get back to it later, and then never really like allowing myself to like have those in the moment reflections and feel it, live it, move on.
Yeah.
And I think when I slowed myself down and started focusing more on how I controlled things, that really I was the reason for the outcome, and I was almost forced to have to like get there. I don't know that there's like one moment. It was more or less as a, you know, I wanted to have a successful career. I wanted to be a great leader for everyone that reports to me. And I just didn't, I felt like something was missing, right? I felt like there was still like missing pieces, and I wanted to be the best, you know, wife and the best mom and the best daughter, the best friend. And like, for some reason I didn't feel like that was, I wasn't fulfilled in those places. You know, I felt good, but it wasn't like that feeling. And I think once I realized it was all on me, I was the one creating the reasons, and I was the one that was really the barrier from feeling that and peeling back why, which really was nothing more than my choice, which is crazy, because it is one of those things where you're like, why did it take me so long? But I think it's just a combination of what you go through in life and when you go through it, and whether you choose to look at it as a, you know, a reason to become better, or you become like a victim to what's going on. And I think I allowed myself to probably be that victim a lot longer just by not dealing with it. Not because I wanted to like people feel sorry for me, but I didn't want to deal with it in the moment. That was too much.
Yeah.
So I'll just put it back here and like, we'll come back to it. But by never coming back to it, I think that was the hard, that was that I finally just had enough of that. I couldn't put anything more behind me, I think, honestly. I think it just, like, too much stuff. Like, I picture myself, like, in a car, and it's filled with so much stuff that, like, there's nowhere for me to go, and, like, I gotta open the door. I gotta let some of it out. So I think when I personally got there, that was probably it. But what caused it, I'm not sure.
Things like we're too young. Oh, we'll eventually get to it, you know, or we'll eventually get to this, or once we get older, we'll figure it out. But and then once you do figure that out, you start finding little things in your life that you can improve to become an even better person, whether it's with your children and or family or whatever it may be, you know, exercising, eating healthy, doing whatever.
For sure.
When it comes to your children, like when they're growing up, I'm just thinking out loud here.
Yeah.
How would you try to get them to see the light quicker?
Honestly, I don't know that I would do anything different than my parents did for me. My mom was really, really positive. She never let us dwell on anything. And like in those moments, she like heard us out, right? So we did talk through everything. I'm thinking of things from sports to like academics to relationships and friendship advice. And she would always remind us there's a bigger world out there. Like one day you're going to look back and we're going to laugh about this, and you'd be like, we're never going to get past it. And we literally laugh about it all the time. But I think I just want my kid, I think that would be what I would be for them, is an outlet. Like, feel your feelings. They need to be felt. Like, go for it. Whether you're happy or you're frustrated, let's talk about it. And then just make sure they realize that this is just one step in the whole walk of life. So keep going, you know, and if it's a smaller step today, that's fine. Tomorrow can be bigger, but honestly, it's just, you know, keep looking ahead. There's a lot more ahead of you.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good one. We could end it off with this one. What advice would you give to a smart, driven Schneider associate about to start their career? And if you have any, like, what advice should they ignore if someone wants to give them advice?
The advice I tell them is be true to who you are, and make sure that in being true to who you are, you challenge the right ways that help grow not only you but the company and push us all and challenge us all to become better. But make sure you have that sounding board to make sure it's, you know, well thought out in the right spaces to spend your time. But honestly, you know, don't lose that sense of who you are, because we hire people because we need to evolve, right? If we hired the same person in every interview and now there's just 100 of us out there, we don't become better.
Yeah.
So don't lose that part of you. That was the reason we said, yes, we want them on this team. As for advice not to listen to, I think it's just, there is no right way, right? So what got us here isn't going to get us there, and that's okay. And how are you going to help us get us to where we're going? And, you know, there isn't just that one size fits all. So don't get stuck in that headspace. Don't let people tell you there's only one way. Be okay with finding the new ways. We need that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like the same question, like, getting your kid to have that, figure out that aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it, you have to figure it out yourself.
Absolutely.
And then you have to grow into that person to figure out yourself. A lot of times it's a lot of things where your parents tell you something, but you hear it, but then until you go through it yourself, you're not going to really learn it and be like, okay, damn, I'm going to have to start improving myself, or this isn't going to work out for me. I can't keep doing the same things over and over again. I have to start proving myself a little bit here.
Yeah. Make that phone call home. You were right.
Yep.
We've all done it.
But that's all I had, Nikki. I appreciate
it.
And
thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah.